What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet.
What is up?
650. We'll get to
that. Is anything up?
We will get to what's up momentarily here because there's a lot that's up with the Vancouver Canucks.
Things are perpetually up. With the Vancouver Canucks are a gravity-free zone.
And you know who knows what's up? Jim Rutherford knows what's up, and he told us all about it today. We'll get to that. Don't worry.
Jim Rutherford always knows what's up, man.
On Sportsnet 650, I'm Jamie Dodd. He's Thomas Drance, my co-host, who also covers the team for The Athletic.
And I don't want to pretend that I'm not very excited about today's show.
Oh, yeah. These are, like,
I have walked in and immediately done the eating soup motion to station manager Canberra like I was a running back that just got a first
feed
down.
Feed me more. That's basically what Drance did. Look, I said it on Twitter.
I always thought it was cereal.
You know.
Oh, it's cereal.
I mean,
no,
it could be anything.
Soup. Who eats cereal like this?
Who eats soup like that?
Everybody.
No one eats soup like that.
Yeah, because there's noodles. You're slurping the noodles. There's no noodles
in cereal.
Of course,
foundational part of soup, noodles. Every soup involving noodles.
Noodle soup is a very common form of soup.
Some soup has noodles.
Okay, look, we've got a stew going. Let's not waste time talking about thin broth.
But as I said on Twitter, I'm repurposing the Darren Rovell tweet. I feel bad for the Canucks, but this is tremendous content.
That was absolutely tremendous content. That was a very strong tweet from
Thank
you,
my friend. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice. For contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years, visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. I'm sure you'll have lots to say, lots of thoughts and questions, so get those submissions in now.
Questions about what? Brandon Saad on waivers?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The Canucks
what the Canucks
destroying
did well
the Blues?
In St. Louis
the
last night?
The inconsistency of NHL goaltender interference standards?
Yep, all of that.
Is that what everyone's talking about today?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Big win, two in a row, baby. Season's back.
Oh, is it?
Get your text in. Anyways, Landon Farrar will join us at 1 o'clock. But of course, let's start with the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, January 28th. Start with the headline. Jim Rutherford speaks. He gives an interview to Gary Mason, one-time regular Canuck reporter, Gary Mason, of course. Loved reading Gary Mason stuff back
still
in the day.
Still do. I want to be so clear.
He gives an interview to Gary Mason at the Globe and Mail, and really, we'll get into all of it, but I would say just off the top, one of the more remarkable on-the-record interviews I can recall from a Canucks executive, or really any executive in the NHL. Just the amount of detail and specificity and the willingness to go on the record with dirty laundry stuff about his team.
Yeah.
Very remarkable from Jim Rutherford.
Somewhat in character. It's not the first time we've heard Jim be deeply honest about the state of the franchise.
I think this is a high water mark for him.
Maybe.
I think saying it's not going to happen with this core is the most upfront, brutally honest, direct thing he's said. That's not a criticism.
No.
I just think it is.
And what was the exact quote? It was, we're not going to be able to get it done with this core?
Yes.
Unreal.
Let me find it here. I had to evade the Globe and Mail paywall. I got my mom to sign in, copy and paste the article, and send it to me. So shout out to my mom.
It can be really tough on a franchise, Rutherford told Gary Mason. Not only present, but into the future, when you're planning on peaking this team into a contending team, and then you find out that's not going to happen, or at least it's not going to happen with the group we have now, then you have to put together a new plan.
Yeah, it's not going to happen with the group we have now. And asked directly by Gary Mason, he says, I asked Rutherford if he means the Miller-Pedersen drama has impacted the entire team. Rutherford says yes, and then follows it up with a yup. So affirming that, yes, the Miller-Pedersen beef, rift, feud, whatever you want to say, drama is one of the key drivers of the inconsistency and the poor performance, not just from those players, but from the whole team this year.
One last part that I thought was interesting, right? Because we talked about this week, right? And I said about the Luongo situation, right? And the whole waiting for Luongo do bit hinged on that for Luongo in Vancouver, there was always going to be another Heritage Classic.
Mm-hmm.
There was always going to be another Game 4 against LA. There was always going to be another what was it, game three against San Jose. Like, there was always another shoe that was going to drop that was going to make him remaining in Vancouver untenable. And Rutherford was asked effectively, like, about how he always thought he could find a solution to any tricky situation. And Rutherford told Gary Mason, and I felt like for a long time that there was a solution here because everybody has worked on it, including the parties involved. But it only gets resolved for a short period of time, and then it festers again. And so it certainly appears like there's not a good solution that would keep this group together. Whew! Now,
I would also say he goes into pretty exact detail about what the path forward looks like in his from his perspective as well, saying, you know, look, you're not going to get a top an equivalent player back. Those deals aren't out there. So you might not even get a second line center back for one of these players that should be first line caliber centers. But you have to take whatever you get and either using those assets on your team or flipping them for other players, attempt to kind of hyperspeed retool back into contending status with really one goal in mind, obviously being a contender. But the goal behind that, doing it at such warp speed, is, as Jim Rutherford says, to try to keep Quinn Hughes in Vancouver, quote, forever, right? Recognizing that a full-on tear-it-down rebuild means Quinn Hughes is going to be out the door, and Jim Rutherford talks about it in these terms pretty bluntly. So your only chance at keeping Quinn Hughes, which is obviously an organizational priority, is do these deals, try to flip whatever assets you can into some way being back into a contender in the hopes that you keep Quinn Hughes. So that's, he's given us the diagnosis for kind of what's gone wrong and why it's not going to happen with this core in his view. And then he's also saying, and here's what I plan to do from this point forward.
So much to unpack here now.
Oh yeah.
Now, I see a lot of reaction that's like, why would he undercut his leverage like that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, I haven't spoken to Jim about why he gave this interview. I wish I'd gotten it myself. But if you think that this is like bad PR, or if you think that this is something where Jim Rutherford has significantly dented the leverage that he had in trade talks, then you are assuming that this Hall of Fame executive, who, as we've seen throughout his time here, it has a showmanship aspect to how he handles the media, right? That effectively he like lost his temper in an interview. That's what you're basically theorizing. If you're suggesting like, why would he undercut mm-hmm. himself like that or undercut his leverage? The truth of the matter is that in considering different offers for Mikko Rantanen and Elias Pettersson over the weekend, it's not like the Carolina Hurricanes were like, what? Something was up with Pettersson and Miller in Vancouver? No. It's not as if when the Rangers decided not to do that trade 10 days ago, Chris Drury was like, huh, really? So I guess there is something. Everyone knows. Everyone knows. The entire league has known about this. Really, you know when Jim Rutherford's leverage disappeared? The moment JT Miller took a 10-game personal leave. The moment that happened, the Canucks were kind of cooked on this file. Now, that said, we've seen that Pettersson has held his value. We've seen that Miller has very, very much compromised value relative to his actual hockey value. Those were going to be true with this factor. That was going to be true without this factor. The truth is that if you're acquiring either of these players, you're saying, hey, those are great players, and we can make it work better for them with us. Warts and all. There's no secrets here. There's no medical bill of health that you know, the team's going to be able to keep from their rivals. This is new for fans, and I understand the emotional reaction. This is not new for me. This is not new for NHL general managers. And frankly, a lot of what Jim Rutherford said, and I know it hits differently coming on the record from the principal involved, but matches pretty closely with what you've heard Elliot Friedman say, and,
yep.
and Frank Saravalli say, and Thomas Durant say, and Rick Dhaliwal say. Like, what are we talking about? This isn't new. Jim Rutherford's leverage was compromised before he gave that interview. Jim Rutherford's leverage is compromised today. Why would he give this interview after the Canucks have won two games, people say? They might get it back on track. Well, Jim Rutherford doesn't think they're going to get it back on track. He said so.
No, this, I don't think this is about, you know, like two-game winning streaks, three-game winning streaks.
Two-game winning streaks.
Oh, they're lost, and now their playoff odds have taken a hit. I mean, he's saying it outright. The key tell to me is the idea that it seems like, you know, it only gets resolved for a short period of time, and then it festers again, right? So what he's saying there is he doesn't buy even the good times at this point. The good times are just mirages before eventually it bubbles back up and it undercuts the team. So in that reading and in that light and with that quote in mind, it doesn't matter if they get on a heater. It's like, well, but we know this is fake.
The club has, and I've been saying this for, what, 10 days now? The club made a decision about 6 weeks ago that this wasn't tenable. Now, two deals have fallen through that we know of in the intervening time. The Rangers deal, the Carolina deal. Here's sort of where, and again, I don't know. I haven't talked to Jim Rutherford about this. But I do think we can look back on this as having an echo to something we've actually seen in this management group's tenure in Vancouver. And the echo that I'm talking about actually happened on these very airwaves when the Vancouver Canucks, having started out the season with seven consecutive losses under Bruce Boudreau, all of them in which they'd led in the second period. Remember that?
Incredible stuff.
It was an unbelievable stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Stabilized their season and started to play better hockey. And then they went east. And Jim Rutherford came on the radio and talked to Sat and Dan Riccio and left very little doubt that in his mind, the structural integrity of the team was fundamentally compromised and that to get to where he thought they needed to go, a new leader behind the bench was required, although he didn't quite frame it that way. We need to work together with Bruce to strengthen all of this. It was very clear. There wasn't, you didn't even need subtext. You could see the text. In some ways, and at the time, I remember not liking it. Like, I remember being quite critical of that commentary because I'd never really seen a coach undermine that way.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I think what we saw after the club replaced Bruce Boudreau showed that, hey, look, if this group is on the same page with their head coach, you're gonna start to see them be able to execute some pretty interesting things, which they did throughout last season. Right? So
I think where most people landed on Boudreau was the way it went down was brutal and really tough to watch, but they needed a new coach.
Yeah.
He was not the answer at coach. And I think that's obviously played out.
And I think if management had made the decision that this guy's not our guy and we need new leadership behind the bench to get to where we want to go, would you say that the results under Tocchet have made that apparent?
100%.
That they were correct?
100%.
Okay. But we also know that that Bruce Boudreau was hired prior to Rutherford, that Rutherford wasn't involved enough to have a full scope of the details, right? That there was an option, a two-way option, right? So the club couldn't just dismiss Boudreau after the Bruce bump, the Bruce There It Is bump, right? Because they would have been on the hook for paying him and Travis Green that season, by the way, right? Effectively, Rutherford was snookered, but, you know, there was an element to which I think he salted the earth to make sure that he was able to make the decision that he felt was necessary to win with this team. Okay. So that's the other time that
Basically to leave no doubt about what was happening going forward.
Right.
Right. There's no, it's not like, hey, maybe if they start playing better, they'll keep Bruce Boudreau. It was like, no, it's over. It's over.
It's over. And a run of fake wins in November isn't going to convince me otherwise. We might beat St. Louis. We might beat Nashville. We might go 3-0 on a road trip in January. Right. Like, the thing about inconsistency is it doesn't mean you're bad. It means you're not good enough often enough, right? This team is not bad. This is a playoff caliber team, period, right? So, but I do think there's an element of this. Now, here's where I think it gets interesting. Gary Mason, when you think of Gary Mason writing about the Canucks currently, what type of information does he provide that you're always like, ooh, that's interesting. I'm fascinated to hear it from Gary Mason.
Extremely high-level organizational perspective
from
ownership,
Canucks ownership. So Jim Rutherford made sure, or I would suspect the other theory. So the one theory is Jim Rutherford lost control, is so frustrated mm-hmm. about the situation and is grumpy about how this has all gone down, and, you know, shot from the chest, honestly, to Gary Mason. Maybe, right? In that case, what terrible PR. What's he done to his leverage? All of that popular reaction you're seeing makes sense. Here's the other side of it. What if Jim Rutherford targeted, is sending a message, right? Is in fact being deliberate and calculated about who he speaks to and what he says. Okay? So that's, if that's the theory, you talk to Gary Mason. Gary Mason is the reporter with the best Canucks ownership links in this market.
Mm-hmm.
We all know it, right? So that's pretty interesting. Here's Gary Mason. Love Gary Mason's work, by the way, but I want to read you his last six bylines. Gary Mason, January 10th. America's moral decline gave us Trump 2.0. Brace for impact. Gary Mason, January 13th. There's a world in which getting home insurance depends on where you live, and we're already living in it. Gary Mason on January 16th. Pete Hegseth's nomination as U.S. Secretary, Defense Secretary, represents a danger to the world. He's then got two Daniel Smith columns on January 21st and January 23rd, and then he drops the bomb from Rutherford this morning.
So not a regular on the Canucks beat.
No. But if you're making sure to send somebody a message internally, you know, I don't know if Francesco Aquilini has an athletic subscription, but I'm pretty confident that he'll read what Gary Mason writes, right? Now, here's the fact pattern. We have multiple deals falling through. We have Canucks management having made up their mind about 6 weeks ago that this core had to be dismantled. We then have seen nothing occur since. We have Paul Bissonnette telling Francesco Aquilini not to trade JT Miller at a Vancouver restaurant. These are the facts we have. We don't have the full picture. We don't know what's mm-hmm. going on. I don't know what's going on. I'm not reporting anything. But when I read between the lines, I sort of wonder, is this a shot that Rutherford is firing? Pizarro burned his boats?
Sure. Let's go with that.
Who was the guy who invaded Mexico?
Know.
The Spanish conquistador?
Cortez?
Cortez burned the boats. Thank you.
I did know.
You did know. I knew you'd know. Is he burning the boats? Is he making sure, hey, no false win streak mm-hmm. in January and early February is going to dissuade us from what we know this team needs to do to get to where we want to go? Because that's, if when I'm weighing the balance of probabilities, what do I think happened here? Do I think Jim Rutherford got angry and lost control of his instrument? Or do I think there's more going on here? I know which sort of explanation I find more compelling.
And to that point about, okay, what is the impact, the immediate result of this? And just from the fan reaction I've seen right away in the immediate aftermath and, you know, now coming into the Dunbar Lumber text line, a lot of people texting in along the lines of, to heck with both of these guys, trade them both. And that has been a sentiment that's been out there, but I think it's become much more common in light of Jim Rutherford's comments, and you can understand why. I mean, it would be very, very difficult now, not impossible, because as you always know, you know, crazy things happen and winning cures everything, production cures everything, of course, but I think it's going to be very difficult for either player to move forward here. This is always going to be hanging over them for the remainder of their Canucks careers now that it's been out there so publicly. They've both come within, you know, inches metaphorically of getting traded from what we can tell. The path forward for both players, like, I don't think there's an option now where it's like, yeah, we trade JT Miller and then everything just goes back to normal and everyone regards Elias Pettersson the same way they did 12 months ago. I don't know how that's a realistic possibility after this commentary from Jim Rutherford. So if the goal was to kind of, one, make sure it happens, and two, prepare everybody for the eventuality that it's going to happen, I think he's done a pretty successful job at that. Like, I think everyone now has a very crystal clear understanding of what we should expect from this team between now and the trade deadline, or at least now in the draft.
Yeah. Well, everything's on the table. If you didn't believe that yet, you believe it now. I guarantee that much. And yeah, look, the truth, as I see it, is that while my understanding had always been that the club had sort of determined that one or the other had to go,
mm-hmm.
you know, Friedman's always insisted throughout this process that one of three things could happen, right? They could trade both.
Yep.
And certainly in the wake of this interview, I think that looms as a larger possibility to me. Now, I still view, as I said yesterday, right, that the sequencing matters and that I think you should not trick yourself into thinking that the better value, combining it with the riskier, older player, is going to be sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do think there's sort of a risk profile on these deals that the club needs to weigh really heavily, not just in terms of Miller's downside risk, but in terms of the upside risk of Pettersson figuring it out in his mid-20s elsewhere.
Yep.
And what that could mean in terms of just how tough the next 5 years would be for Canucks fans.
And we should point out Rutherford even kind of acknowledges that, or the possibility of trading them both, but also the timing factor here and the uncertainty. You know, it says from Gary Mason's article, Rutherford and his general manager, Patrick Alvin, are uncertain if removing one of either Pettersson or Miller will fix the problem. We don't know, Rutherford said. We'll just have to wait to find out. We'll have to take it a step at a time. If we try and do it too fast, that's really when you can make some mistakes. But yes, basically saying like, yeah, I don't know if trading one of them is sufficient. And there's some information we'd like to gather through this process. And we do want to be, you know, they're in this bind where you've got this problem and you want to move past it. You want to remove the obstacle from your organization or the obstacles, but you also don't want to be reckless and you don't want to make moves certainly recklessly or without any patience. So he's even acknowledging the possibility that trading both of them might be required. And just to move on, you know, to keep the whiteboard structure a little bit here, and don't worry, in the next segment, it's open as well. We'll get back into unpacking his comments. We'll dig into some of the questions in the inbox, but just to pivot to the broadsheet portion a little bit here, the one thing I did want to note, because again, it's like, well, what's rumors, what's rumblings here when Jim Rutherford is just coming out and saying it? You know, on that point, Patrick Johnston on Blue Sky from Post Media kind of captioning things this way, basically that the options are not trade one or trade the other. The options are Miller goes or both go. So at least that's Patrick Johnston's perspective on it that I wanted to pass along in the broadsheet, that Miller is almost certainly going to go. And then the question is, do they trade Pettersson as well on top of that? That's a little bit of extra perspective from Patrick Johnston, in addition to what Jim Rutherford gave us in very, very fulsome detail in the Globe and Mail, speaking to Gary Mason. Okay, lineup notes, because the Canucks are practicing today. They play tomorrow in Nashville after beating St. Louis last night. They recalled Atu Ratu from Abbotsford. No corresponding roster move to go with that. They did have an open roster space, so he just slides in there. We'll see if that means anything for a player being injured or a trade or anything like that. To quickly wrap things up here, the playoff standings update. Canucks playoff chances back up to 75%, highest they've been in a little bit, after beating the St. Louis Blues in St. Louis last night. And by the way, the Blues are in like franchise crisis mode now after losing to the Canucks.
No matter how bad it feels around the Canucks, the Blues are the most directionless franchise in hockey. There's a reason why every time someone has brought them up is like, hey, they're also in the mix. Hey, they're playing better under Jim Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
I've like kind of scoffed at it and been very insistent that this race is Calgary, Vancouver, and Utah. The Blues are terrible. Awful. And completely stuck being terrible. As bad as it seems in Vancouver right now, I promise you, you could be St. Louis.
Yep.
And that would be a lot worse.
Do you have anything betting-wise for us?
Well, I mentioned it yesterday and said that we would track it in terms of to make the NHL playoffs. The Blues yesterday were plus 750 to make the playoffs, plus 1,100 today. The Canucks were minus 110 to make the playoffs yesterday, minus 150 today. So, a pretty big swing in the gambling odds as a result of one game. The Canucks, of course, were underdogs going into last night's game. And I mean, we didn't talk about the game at all, but don't know that it was as convincing really as the score made it look, to be totally honest with you. Like, I didn't think it was some, you know, bangarang Canucks performance necessarily. And I do think that Tucker goal should have counted pretty clearly in the first period. But nice win. Good effort. You saw the effort.
Oh yeah.
And anytime you see the effort from this team, it's both like, hey, look, they could have something. And also, why have we watched 25 games that look nothing like that already this season? You know, it's one of those that's like, when I see this team play well, it almost upsets me more about all the games that I've watched them. It's not about mm-hmm. whether they played well or not. All the games that I've watched them sleepwalk through it effort-wise.
Yep.
That's what's galling to me. I can't imagine having built this team and watching it. Like, I can't imagine what Rutherford and Alvin think about it, because that would drive me.
Well, I can imagine loony. What Rutherford thinks about it. I can imagine extremely accurately what Rutherford thinks about
it. And boy, can I understand it. Like, that's, yeah. Anyway.
One thing we don't have to do a lot of is wondering what Jim Rutherford thinks.
No.
He'll tell us. Let us know. All right.
Eventually.
That's the whiteboard for today. We'll take a break here, but as mentioned, I want to dive into the inbox. Lots of good questions coming in, reactions to what Jim Rutherford had to say in his interview with Gary Mason today at the Globe and Mail, of course, basically saying the rift is too much. They're going to have to trade at least one of Elias Pettersson and JT Miller. It's bringing the team down. It's not going to happen with the group we have now. That's what Jim Rutherford says. We'll talk more about that on the other side here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.